7 minutes past 6 o'clock. Good evening from me, Ray White, in for Bruce on The Money Show, which is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank. Well, coming up on the program in the next hour, talking about a cashless society. Now, Capitec did a Twitter survey to ask, do we need cash or just plastic? And I think it's a lovely discussion to be had, because if you go out shopping these days just to find an ATM, just to go and queue and get your money, what's the point? Because you can just go and use your bank card. It's that easy, provided there's money inside there, of course, as well. Then a little bit later on, talking about the best bits of The Money Show, and you need to pay attention because thereafter it's the brutal biz quiz, and it's just for fun this evening. I'd like to hear from you. Give me a call, 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. If you're in Johannesburg, you can also SMS on 31567 or 31702, as Rory did. Rory, thanks for your kind words. I do appreciate it.
702 and Cape Talk.
An interesting article on the Rand caught our eye today. It's written by George Klinos of ETM Analytics. Think about this. GDP growth forecasts are being revised downward. The extent of the revisions will depend on load shedding. We've heard about that from Goldman Sachs. Then load shedding has been also downgraded to stage two, but it continues. That was for today. The BRICS bank on the verge of issuing Rand bonds. EU offers UK Prime Minister May a further 2 weeks to secure a deal. I'm just reading out various news headlines here. I mean, things aren't stable for emerging market currencies, things unstable for our rand. So where does this leave the rand? There are questions about why it's so resilient. So this article today caught our eye. It's from George Klinos. He's head of research at ETM Analytics. George, hi, good evening. Welcome to the show. George, are you with us? Let's get George onto the show. There we go. George, good evening. Hi. George Klinos, are you with us? Let me just try one more time. I think we're battling a little bit with our phone lines over here. Let's get George onto the line. Do we have a... All right, what we're going to do is try and get George back on the line just so that we can speak to him about this, because it's a very interesting article. Basically, it comes down to the fact that the rand is very resilient. And just looking at what happened today, I mean, losing 1.5% at one moment, making sure that, it just sort of bounced back. George, we're going to try you one more time. George Klinos. All right, looks like we don't have George at the moment. Let's try get him back. In the meantime, all right, we're going to park that interview. We have to park interviews on the show, you see. So let's go to our story on a cashless society, because I'm quite excited about the story. It's quite something. It's the story I've been talking about in the business news. 45% of South Africans are ready to go cashless. A recent study suggested cash costs South Africans about 23 billion rand. Now, that's every year. In a world where the trend is increasingly to go cashless, with countries like India, they've already got these fully cashless villages where people just don't use money. How does South Africa fare? My question about this is, can you survive like this? And let's be honest about it. If you go off and you go to, say, for instance, shopping, and there you go, there's a parking guard out there as well, you have to pay the guy some sort of money. But what do you do in a situation like that? Well, on the line is the executive of marketing and communications at Capitec Bank, Francois Verviers. Hi, Francois. Good evening. Welcome to The Money Show. Oh, dear. Looks like we've got a bit of a problem with our lines at the moment. It's not working at all. Let's try one more time. Hi, Francois. Can you hear me? Francois? There you go. Now we've got you. Thanks, Francois. Great to have you on. Tell us more about the Go Cashless campaign. It sounds fascinating.
Thanks, Ray. This is really an initiative from Capitec just to raise awareness and place focus on the cost of cash. I think we live in a society where cash is still a reality, and we know from the Twitter poll we've done that most people, in fact 59% of respondents, still use cash when they have to pay for transport, especially in informal transport or taxis, as well as when they have to pay for shopping at spaza shops, for instance. But for the rest of the market, it's an ingrained behavior, and that's a behavior that we challenge. Because cash is not just expensive in terms of the direct cost. We mentioned 23 billion rand in terms of what cash is costing South Africans on an annual basis. But there's also the indirect costs, and that's the cost of paying for transport to get to an ATM, or the time you spend in an ATM, or the cost of that cash withdrawal, or even the risk of carrying the cash and potentially losing it. So we're driving awareness of that because there are very good alternatives. And those alternatives are much easier to use, and they cost you less. So if you swipe your card, there's no transaction fee. And if you do payments on the app, in the case of Capitec, that only costs you R1. And that's the behavior that we want to drive. And we think that this campaign is a great way of creating awareness. But we know that one campaign is not going to solve it. It requires a movement, and it will require the whole of South Africa and the industry, and especially the informal markets, to start playing along. And hopefully with this, we can start that movement.
Yeah. My question to you is, I mean, as Capitec Bank, let's be honest about it. If you have a look at a bank, every single time I withdraw money or I go and deposit money, it actually costs me money because the banks sort of benefit. Won't this also sort of impinge on your sort of way of making money out of me because you're saying to yourself, don't worry about bank fees?
Not in our case, Bruce. Our philosophy has always been on cash to recover the cost that infrastructure costs us. And what we've done in our recent price changes is we've actually reduced the cost of cash on transactions lower than R1,000. It's a fixed amount of R6 per 1,000, which allows people, if you need small amounts of cash, to draw that amount at a cost of R6. But if you want bigger amounts, we really motivate them to do those payments on the banking app or through even immediate payments on our app for only just, you know, R8 per transaction. So ATMs is for us not an income driver. It's a necessity in South Africa, and we want to move our market away from cash and away from ATMs. The cost of cash management, of insurance, of cash in transit, of the infrastructure, the IT updates to the ATMs, and the security around it is really a big drag on the industry, and it's something that we're hoping to need to change in.
Right. In your survey, who exactly did you speak to? I'm thinking about youngsters. Don't youngsters want to still use cash, or have they gone into the internet space age and that's the end of it? They just want to go with their cards and go online as well.
Our survey was on Twitter, so it really is a cross-section of the population that you find on Twitter. A vast majority, well, a combined majority of people said that they would either prefer to be completely cashless or for the most part to be cashless. But we find, especially in youngsters, that this is not a big problem. These days, for students and for young working individuals, swiping your card is an ingrained behavior. It's something most youngsters do these days. I think the behavior change that is required is in your more traditional bank market, a market that has become sensitive to paying for small transactions with a card. And the behavior we're really looking for is that, you know, most people still pay for a coffee with cash, but when they buy a large appliance, they would pay for it with a card. And we think you should pay for your coffee with your card as well. So even then, you use a small payment system like MasterPass and just come with your phone and you pay without even needing a card. Those transactions really take advantage and control. They can track their money, track their spending on their banking app. It costs the bank less money because it's less infrastructure required to do. And what we do at Capitec is we pass that saving back onto the client in the fees that pay. So it costs them either nothing for the price of a full payment or a MasterPass payment, or R1 for electronic payment.
Yeah, yeah. Francois, it's a bit of a bad line. You're going to leave it there, I'm afraid. Francois Verveers, Executive of Marketing and Communications at Capitec Bank. A very interesting SMS has just come through. Says, Ray, with load shedding, it was only cash sales when you could not swipe your card. This is SA, says Josie. Yes, Josie, therein does lie a bit of a problem. What do you do if you go off somewhere and you've packed up your supermarket trolley, or maybe you're out to that romantic dinner with your partner? All of a sudden, it comes time to pay and your card doesn't work. I mean, what do you do? Do you perhaps phone a friend?
702 and Cape Talk.
Right, let's get back to that discussion about the Rand. An interesting article on the Rand caught our eye. It's written by George Glenos of ETM Analytics. Think about it. GDP growth forecasts are being revised downward. The extent of the revisions will depend on load shedding. And then we have our load shedding. It's been downgraded to stage two for today, but it's there and it's going to be with us, I think, for the next few months. Then the BRICS Bank on the verge of issuing rand bonds. And then the EU offers UK Prime Minister Theresa May a further 2 weeks to secure a deal. These are just some of the main news headlines from today. And our rand just seems to be affected. It goes on and it goes on. But why is it that our rand survives? On the line is Head of Research at ETM Analytics, George Glenos. George, can you hear us this time?
I can hear you perfectly, Ray. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Okay, George, it's a volatile time. How has the rand been affected by load shedding in the past? I mean, it just seems to be so resilient regardless.
Yeah, I think you do need to compartmentalize it, because there was a very clear reaction that we saw back in December when we got jolted back into reality when load shedding kickstarted again. This time it was slightly different in that it also came accompanied with a whole host of ventilated information and revelations about what really was going on at Eskom and the true state of affairs. And I think that, together with what's already been a very difficult economic climate, dented sentiment. And it was very clear. I mean, if you go back through December and you have a look at the rand's performance, in fact, it was doing quite nicely up until load shedding started. And it started and the rand just turned the corner and went the other direction. And it just never seemed to recover. But it seems to have gotten to a level right now where foreigners have shown a little bit of interest to get back into South Africa. And so it has reflected an element of resilience. And I think it baffles a lot of South Africans that we get caught up in so much of this pessimism that it sometimes lose the wood for the trees and forget that there is still a value proposition that South Africa does offer. Sometimes we just need to regain the perspective on what's happened to rand, and the fact that at 14 rand 40 or 14.50, where we weren't, where we were trading not so long ago, rand could be offering a substantial discount. And sometimes as South Africans, we tend to forget that.
Yeah. Is the rand undervalued? Because every economist these days you ask, they'll say, no, the rand's undervalued. Or is it like it, like you said, we are sitting where we are sitting because of the different problems, but we're not sliding?
Yeah, so in answer to that question, we've run a valuation framework for a number of years now. The valuation framework that we've got has been fairly consistent, and it does swing between periods of over and undervaluation. At the moment, against the specifically, we're hovering around about the 15% undervaluation position. So there's no question that there is a little bit of it that's baked into the dollar rand just on that basis. But then, you know, there's different ways of valuing a currency and understanding that relative value. You can look at it relative to other emerging markets, and certainly the rand hasn't performed particularly well against other emerging markets. And then you can value it in an even more innovative way, if you like. And here we utilize our analytics to try and figure out where rand might have been trading had it not been for all of this bad news, load shedding, et cetera, et cetera. And we found that the rand might have been levels close to, you know, around the 12 to 12 rand 50 mark. So again, you're talking about the potential there of anything between a 15 and 20% discount that's already in the price right now. So as we approach Moody's next week, week Friday, and we're all holding our breath to see if we get downgraded, and I think there's a very realistic chance that we do, we need to also just keep perspective that we are trading at a discount. Our bonds already are trading at a discount. Some would argue that our shares are doing the same thing. The combination of all of that still renders South Africa an investment proposition, even though it might be an uncomfortable one for some.
Yeah, I mean, President Cyril Ramaphosa saying, we'll get over this, this too shall pass. But I mean, the damage that may happen if it doesn't pass in the next few months is very concerning, isn't it?
It's massively concerning, and the damage goes just so much further than what we experience every day in the disruptions and the lack of productivity. Think about, and it's an incalculable amount, simply because we won't know what we've foregone as a country, but think about how many projects, how much investment has not taken place in South Africa because of load shedding that you will never hear about. It's opportunity cost that you can't quantify, but you know that it exists. and it's probably quite a substantial number. If to that you add the loss of productivity and the disruption that comes from it and the inefficiencies that arise, I mean, you get a colossal number. You really do get to a huge number. And this is why I constantly remind people to hold politicians to account when it comes to these things, because the amount of damage caused by policies that just didn't, that just good enough, has hurt South Africa, and it's particularly hurt the poor, and that is the most regrettable part of it all.
Yeah. George, what do you think is going to happen with Moody's next week, Friday? Are they simply going to lose patience with us?
I think there's a good chance they do lose patience. You know, if you had asked me that question just post the budget, I felt that we might have gotten away with just a downgrade to the outlook. But here's the reality, Ray, and it's why I mentioned what I mentioned in my report this morning. Load shedding is impacting on growth. There's no question about it. How much you choose to trim off your growth forecast depends on how severe a load shedding, a bout of load shedding you price into your forecast models. But if you're talking about anything in the region of 0.5% to maybe 0.8%, you're left with a very meager growth rate of only about 0.5%. Which ultimately, when you compute that back into things like the budget deficit and the debt to GDP ratios, means that we're probably going to be running a budget deficit ratio closer to 5% than 4%. And at 5%, when you're only growing at 0.7, well, that's catastrophic. I mean, it means that our debt pile is growing at a very rapid rate, at a really unsustainable rate. It's completely against the idea of fiscal consolidation that has been a theme that government has been putting forward for years and years and years. And if I were Moody's, I think I would be downgrading. That would be my perspective of it. But you know, perhaps they're more patient than I am. We can hope they are.
Oh, I really hope they are. Head of research at ETM Analytics, George Glenos, thank you so much for coming on to The Money Show. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Ray.
The Money Show. The Markets.
Our market commentator tonight is Garth Curry, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sunlum Private Wealth. Hi, Garth. Good evening.
Good evening, Ray.
The Rand losing major ground today. I mean, you heard what George Glenos had to say. What's your take?
It was a tough day at the desk. We started the Rand very firm this morning at sitting at around 14 Rand 18 to the US dollar, and then the German manufacturing figures came out, which were far below expectations. And the market saw that as saying, let's take risk off these markets. And literally within 5 minutes of those figures coming out, the Rand was sitting at 14.45. So, I mean, the Rand dropped nearly 3%. In the same token, the Turkish lira dropped 5% and the Turkish markets dropped. So emerging market currencies dropped quite dramatically, as did most major currencies against the US dollar straight after that.
Oh, it's not so good at all. Okay, looking at those markets, the miners receiving a big boost today. Of course, it's the gold price. Gold's continuing to strengthen.
The key leader in that was definitely the gold has continued to weaken as the dollar's gone the other way and people are trying to take risk off and defect themselves there. So the gold went up to 13, you know, 1318. It's had quite a nice bounce. Platinum also picked up marginally. And oil price holding fairly steady. So some of the oil stocks globally, all the resources holding fairly steady, but gold leading the way. So the Anglo Gold was nearly up 6%. Gold Fields is pretty much 5.5% to 6%, and Harmony up 4.5%. And Amplats also continuing its run up 3%.
I see Naspers today finishing, I think, 2.5% up, which is very good for them because the rest of the market did not look good whatsoever.
We saw Tencent's results come out while we were away yesterday, and those figures came out, you know, slightly ahead of our expectations. They were about 28% increase in earnings versus a market consensus of 25.6%. But initially, Tencent in China came down nearly 2%. But as the market progressed here and the market digested those figures in the auction, I think we saw nearly 4 billion turnover today and total turnover 21, which is a bit light on you know, just before, during the long weekend here. But Tencent came down, but Naspers finished the day 76 Rand positive and nearly 2.5% better, with good volumes coming through on Tencent at the end.
Yeah. Discovery, not doing very well today. I think going back down to original levels, I mean, I think it was down about 3.5%. Discovery not alone, though. I mean, it was looking at some of the retailers as well. I think Mr. Price taking a ring as well.
I think the big one there was the market was just seeing the uncertainty, and there's a lot of pessimism with load shedding and what's been happening on the ground. You know, load shedding has definitely put a lot of people in the dark, and these retailers are just saying, I think Goldman's put out a consensus that you'd see the figures, the GDP figures in South Africa possibly dropping 0.8% today going forward for the quarter. And Mr. Price led the way with down 5%, but that whole sector, most of the retailers were down 2%. The insurance sector was also down 1.95% to 2%. And then your healthcare dropped nearly 2.34%. So most of the healthcare stocks took a lot of pain. And Discovery, there was quite a bit of volumes, and they finished down at about 136 Rand or nearly 3.5%, which has brought them right back to where they were prior, as you said. And but the total sector was under pressure today. Even the Aspens and the Mediclinics, the whole sector came down just over 2.3%.
It's quite troubling because, I mean, you look at the All Share, it was hovering about 50,000 points at one point. Then it went sort of up to 53. Now finishing just up over 56. But if you look at the carnage of what's happening at the moment, is this a sign of the times?
It's getting very, very difficult to pick individual stocks out there. We've seen some of the big players that have been picked off one at a time, whether it be Aspen and a lot of it's come down to debt. So it's been Aspen, it's been the EOHs, it's been a lot of the big companies that are holding big debt positions that have really been affected. And you've also seen some of the individual companies that have been coming with results lower than expectations, and the market's punished those. So we've also seen a couple that have done very well in the mining sector. And in the oil sector, we've seen those shares come with good earnings as those consumer stocks have looked, you know, come off. Your mining shares have actually picked up over the last year or so.
Right. Garth Curry, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sunlum Private Wealth. Have a great weekend. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it.
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank.
Right, time for the best bits of the Money Show. Now, you need to pay attention here because right after this, we've got the Brutal Biz Quiz, and a few of these best bits have got a few clues stuck inside of them, so pay attention. All right, so former Steinhoff chairperson and top shareholder Christo Visser was on earlier on this week where he defends his side of the story and explains what he calls the success of the massive Steinhoff fraud.
All these critics, Bruce, I would like to one day engage in a debate and say to them, now you explain to me exactly what it is that a non-executive board should have done in addition to what they have done. This company had a very sophisticated internal audit function. They had component auditors all over the world. They had Deloitte at the statutory auditors. They had regulators looking at them. They were dealing with banks. They were dealing with analysts, very, very large and sophisticated investors. How come it took PwC with, I'm told, 100 professionals working on it for 14 months to unravel what had happened? How do you expect a non-executive director to sit down when they meet four or five times a year and say, whoops, but there's something here that I don't agree with? Part of the success of this fraud, if you analyze it, is that it started, it would appear, relatively small, and then incrementally there was additions. So nobody ever saw something jump out at them and say, wait a minute, but this figure is suddenly different. It was done in an extremely sophisticated manner over a number of years. So I would like the critics to say, to tell anybody what else the non-executive board members could have done.
Right, that was Christo Visser. And then this week's shapeshifter was Time Bank CEO Sandile Shabalala. Bruce asked him what the need is for a new bank.
Yeah, so I think that's the beauty of it, Bruce, because I think what we have found, and maybe through also my experience in banking, is that there's a lot of complexity that is in the current banking system right now. Too many products that customers don't understand. And that brings about a high level of cost implication in terms of how banking products and services are provided. In the simplest form, I think many people want to actually have simple products that they can understand, that they can know exactly what is it that they pay for. And we believe that there is a big market for that. There is a big opportunity in this environment to simplify banking, not just simplify banking, but also take the cost of banking down. So the fact that our proposition is a very simplified proposition actually speaks to the heart of what banking should be about. It shouldn't be that complex. It shouldn't be that sophisticated that the customers don't understand what they pay for. So we want to bring about simplicity in, and transparency in banking.
I feel like I could be talking to your old colleague Barry Hall from Nedbank, who's setting up the Discovery Bank, or I could be talking to Adrian Gore, or I could be talking to Michael Jordan, because you're all saying very similar things as to what the big goal is in terms of the disruptive opportunity presented by the startup fintechs, which is what you are.
Yeah, but you know, I think if you look in terms of these new entrants that are coming to the market, I think we should all be welcoming that, because I think they're really sort of wanting to disrupt the status quo. I think for many years now, banking has not actually really sort of risen up to what the customers are actually looking for. There's a lot of banking products that are there, but in its truest form, I don't think that really answers what the customer needs is. So the fact that you have these players coming to the market, and I guess also saying the same thing, I think they become the catalyst for actually changing the banking landscape in the biggest way, because banking is not going to be the same going forward after these players have entered the market. And that can only work in the best interest of the customer.
Right, that was Sandile Shabalala. Then, in this week's Make Money Mondays feature, Bruce got the financial planner of Gradich Mahura Investments as Craig Gradich in studio to find out about his personal relationship with money.
My dad passed when I was very young, so I was 5 years old. And yeah, life was fairly tough. Yeah. Young mother, three children, three boys.
Poor woman.
Yeah, and I was always hungry.
But it's a brutal reality of so many kids' upbringing in South Africa at different times. I mean, people generally are.
And back then, we lost the car, lost the house, and all of that. So I've experienced that. For my experience with money growing up was that it was a scarce commodity. But what I learned from my mom was how to budget. So I can budget with the best of them. and actually, it's quite funny because the first budget I managed as a professional in industry, I gave almost half of it back because they gave me a budget and they said, yeah, you know, you head of marketing, that's your budget. And it was inbred in there, you know, that you got a budget, you try and save as much of it as you can. And literally by the end of that, getting towards the end of that budgeting period, people are shouting at me to spend this money. I'm like, no, why would we spend it? We achieved our objective with
half the money.
And it was unheard of.
You're a terrible corporate employee. Yes.
I frustrated a lot of people.
And then on Tuesday, Bruce explored digital communication etiquette in the How It Works feature with writer and business writing trainer Mandy Collins. Here they are talking about titles.
I think a lot of those honorifics have fallen away. I think if you're worried, use the honorific and they will say, please call me Mandy or call me Bruce or whatever. I tend to work with a lot of doctors, so I always go in with a doctor, you know, to appease their God complex. And then when they answer and tell, but with their first name, then I take the cue from the way they respond. So the guideline is always to go in slightly more formal, and then when people give you permission to be less formal, then you can be less formal.
In the same way as going to the cocktail party where you've overdressed.
Exactly. Then you can take off your tie if everybody else is in an open-necked shirt.
You wear a tie.
Of course.
Oh, naturally. I would expect nothing less. But the honorifics of the dears and all that sort of stuff are banned, I would argue, in the WhatsApp SMS space.
Yes, I don't think they're necessary there. I think on email, you know, again, depending on your relationship with the person, you know, if you're writing to a professor in a university, you're not going to go, "How's it, Brew?" when you send him an email. You're going to say, "Dear Professor so-and-so." And similarly in a WhatsApp, I might actually do it as well. If it's somebody who's got sort of an actual title apart from Mr. or Ms., I'd go with the title because people are a bit touchy about those.
What happens if it's an honorary doctorate? And what happens if
I'm not going to investigate the entire credential.
What happens
I'm not keeping track.
What happens if they've got an MBA? Do you have to acknowledge their MBA?
No, then you have to use really big words like scaling and jargon. Yeah, you've got to use lots of jargon if it's an MBA, definitely.
Yes, you have to. And you only know if they've done an MBA if they come back with a jargon-filled rant.
Exactly, and then you take your cue from that.
And those are the best bits of The Money Show.
702 at Cape Talk.
Right, time for the brutal biz quiz. Now, it's just for fun, but I must admit our producer, Cecile Basson, this afternoon, she sat the entire afternoon trying to fox you, trying to catch you out. So my dare, my challenge to you is you will not be able to answer these questions. And this is how it works. I'll ask you a series of questions. If you are the last person standing, then you're the brain of the brutal biz quiz. You're the champion of this week. So, 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Those are the numbers to dial. The first question is, which advisory services group prepared the forensic report on Steinhoff? I'll give it to you again. Which advisory services group prepared the forensic report on Steinhoff? 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567.
The Money Show. The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Right, let's see if we've got you this evening. Our first question is, which advisory services group prepared the forensic report on Steinhoff? Let's go to Isaac. Isaac, hi. What is the answer, Isaac? Isaac? Oh, just Hello? Say that again. I didn't quite get it. Go for it.
PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Absolutely, Isaac. Well done. Now, this report is in excess of 3,000 pages with over 4,000 documents as annexures. And you know what's been happening at Steinhoff. All right, here's your second question. And I'm sure I'm going to stump you right here. Of which country is Garuda, the national airline? Of which country is Garuda? Yo. Isaac, absolutely, you're on a roll. The Indonesian airline is the latest airline to cancel its multi-billion-dollar order of Boeing 737 MAX 8 passenger jets. That's after those two deadly crashes. All right, here we go. Isaac, you ready for your third one? The value of which luxury resort and casino complex has been reduced by three... Didn't even finish that one. That's right, Sun City it is, reduced by 306 million rand. Bruce interviewed Anthony Leeming, the CEO of Sun International, this week. The company did not declare a dividend. All right, here we go. Which listed company in South Africa owns Burger King, Dunkin' Donuts, and also Baskin Robbins? Well, this is a hard one.
It's GIP.
GIP, yes, Grand Parade Investments, GIP. How are you knowing all of this? You've been listening this whole week, haven't you?
Yes.
Good for you. Well, the company said this week it wants to focus on making the Burger King franchise profitable as it liquidates Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin Robbins, which counted losses of over 70 million rand. All right, here we go. Tell you what. If you get this one right, you're the brain of this month, I think, because I'm so impressed with you, Isaac. I really am. Here we go. Which new bank is owned by Patrice Motsepe's African Rainbow Capital Financial Services? I spoke about them this evening. Which new bank?
Time Bank.
Yes, absolutely. Isaac, congratulations. Jeez. What's the secret of your success? Because I think you've disappointed about 500,000 people who are trying to get through.
Thank you.
Oh, absolute pleasure. What's the secret of your success?
Listening to the radio.
There we go. Listening to the Money Show. Not that hard. Isaac, congratulations. There you go. A virtual congratulations from the Money Show. You're quite right. Time Bank. Bruce spoke to CEO Sandile Shabalala in this week's Shapeshifter interview. Congratulations. Nice one, Isaac.
The Money Show is brought to you by NetBank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. NetBank.
And that wraps up the Money Show. Bruce will be back with you on a Monday evening. Have a safe long weekend.